As communicated by The Ox, The Ox is a commercial hub dedicated to healing, wellness, and racial equity, a space co-created and owned by the community. Laurice and I, too, believe that power can only happen through connectivity. The Ox has figured out how to do that through their commitment to equity and access while working collaboratively to help create a space where all are welcome, respected, and understood. Listen as the creators of The Ox, Jackie, Lori, Tasha, and Tiffany, talk about their experiences and challenges as they get shit done. Listen to understand.
Our goal is to have conversations that are real and authentic and honest. We approach everything that we do from 100% Black perspective because we want to talk about equity, inclusion, diversity, love, and really want to get at what Evanston says it is and what it's not and what it can be because it's our hometown. So we are happy that you guys are here. A little backdrop. We met Tasha. Well, you know, I've known Tasha for a long time, but I didn't make the connection until we met at Potbelly's, which is absolutely my fault. But we got connected through a friend of mine, Liz Mayday, and we met Tasha and her partner and had some conversations, and it just started into a groundswell of opportunity in terms of what we're doing and what she's involved in.
First of all, I want to say congratulations on the funding that you got. Well deserved. I was starting to think you should have asked for more.
And so did we.
But I was so happy that I was able to speak for Evanston Rules on your behalf. What you're doing is so important and so relevant and so necessary. I think I said when I spoke that I believe that Black women have bared the weight of so much for so long, and we deserve the opportunities as well. So tell me how it began.
In so many different directions, but I guess I'll start with Jackie and I, who we just wanted to open up a laundromat in the Fifth Ward or just somewhere where our people were, due to the fact that the Fifth Ward has limited resources. You know, they just voted on the school, but that's been 60 years. There was no laundromat. It used to be one on Emerson. That went away. I guess there was a small one on Simpson. That went away. No grocery store. We just couldn't think of anything that was just like, let me walk outside and kind of go to it. So I would look on the internet and I saw how the European laundromats were like that spot, like everyone goes to just to hang out and chill, wash clothes. And I'm thinking, well, why not that? Everyone knows the story of us being denied a bank loan despite our jobs, our collateral, our pensions. We only wanted, I think, 250. What was it, Jackie? Like 300,000?
It wasn't three. It was like 250.
Yeah, something, you know, small just to get the laundry equipment going. And the banks were like, no, you need more experience. And so that kind of put us on a standstill, had a bad taste in our mouth. So
what banks did you go to in Evanston?
Do I need to say the banks?
Absolutely.
Well, we went to Chase, and I felt like, you know, we both banked with Chase, and we went there. And of course, we spoke with one of the community banks, but that kind of went to, hey, why don't you go get a micro loan? And it was just too many avenues to just try to get 250.
Have you guys since taken your money out of Chase?
No, I haven't, but, you know, we'll get there. Don't rush us. We're going to get there. One traumatic event at a time.
Please take your money out of Chase and get to a bank that respects your money as green, not as Black.
No, I agree.
I mean, it's sad that we have two historic Evanstonians who have very reputable jobs that have gone through all kind of background checks to get those jobs, and then have a history of being assets to the specific departments you serve. But it just amazes me, walking in Black is always walking in Black. It's not walking in opportunity, but I do want to applaud you guys for continuing your mission in spite of, because as Laurie said, Black women have always, in spite of, found a way to make it happen.
So what happened next?
We just kind of sat still, tried to reevaluate. And after that, I just kind of sitting during COVID thought, well, what can, you know, I do considering other people are going through this exact same thing. So that's when I started Boosting Black Business. And with the help of everyone on this screen who shared it, gave me ideas, helped me research, donated, we were able to raise $110,000 for 9 other Black-owned companies throughout Chicagoland. And it just helped push people to start. So it wasn't like $100,000 worth per, but $20,000 was helping them do a lot. And all of a sudden, you know, someone brought up Lori's name to us.
Is and I'm Karen? Like, oh.
Yeah, is so that- Karen, yeah, Karen Courtright, she had called me at 10 o'clock in the morning. Like, I want to introduce you to some people who are really looking to just do great things and just give power to people. And maybe you should talk to them. And sure enough, by, I don't know, 7 o'clock that night, Tiff and I and my cousin, we were down at Good to Go trying to just eat a beef patty, minding our own business. And she went to the back to speak to Lori. And I'm just, you know, not thinking anything of it. And then Lori and Julie Kaufman from Milwaukee came to the front and they go, are you Tasha Wilson? And I'm like, mid bite, like, I just want to eat this beef patty. What is happening? And sure enough, the following Monday, we had a meeting. We shared each other's goals. Lori just wants to push mindfulness and have a healthy space for people. And I'm like, laundry is health. And so after that, we just kept going. And then that's when Wellbeing Chicago was born. And I'll let Tiffany explain that. But we were just coming together in the weirdest ways. And in the end, we ended up with the Ox.
So for clarity, right? Good to Go was not planned.
Well, Good to Go was planned
for lunch. I mean,
the meeting with you and Lori. So Lori, why were you Good to Go? You were just hanging out eating or what?
I was there. Jabori had set up a meeting with another Evanstonian woman to sort of vet this idea, to talk about this idea of, you know, a wellness space in Evanston. Of course, I don't have that many Black friends. I was not like, you know, I mean, go look shopping, looking for Black people. It was very weird and odd.
You can tell that by this call.
Well, I have Black, but you know, this is very awkward. But we met this woman. Well, that was like a no-go, and that name shall remain nameless. But it was like, oh wow, that was really a rough meeting. But it was clear not the right way to start just dialoguing. And Jabori walked out, and Tiffany was there, and he brought Tiffany to meet, and then Tasha was sitting with Tiffany, and we just all began an engagement with one another, just getting to know each other and realizing, at least for me, is like, oh, these guys share a vision, what wellness could be and could look like in community. And then they built the vision from there. So we just spent a lot of time, you know, step by step, and it's been, you know, 2 years almost.
That's awesome. So Jabori and Tiffany.
I can tell the me and Jabori story. I've known Jabori for many years. He's a personal trainer. And when I decided to start my own wellness journey, I met him and we trained together for many years. That journey prompted me to really fall in love with wellness and create my own business in wellness coaching. And so then he and I partnered on different retreats and wellness seminars and things like that. And we used to talk about having this vision for a wellness center, but it seemed so far-fetched because of the startup cost and space and yada, yada. So it was really just like a dream that we had, but had no real intentions, I don't think, of ever acting on it. I was right alongside Tasha as she was coming up with the Laundry Cafe and Boosting Black Business. I like to consider myself just a change agent. So anytime I see Black folks trying to do something impactful, whether it be for themselves or the community, I'm all in and I'm trying to figure out what I can do to help. So fast forward to this serendipitous moment at Good to Go. I'm coming out, literally Jabori sees me in his car. He turns around, comes back in, introduces me. I'm like, hey, Tasha, Tamika, I'll be back. I'm going to meet these two white ladies. I don't know what's going on. So I meet Lori and Julie And I don't even take to people that quickly, but Lori for sure is just genuine energy and spirit just resonated with me right away. We all come back out to the table, me, Tasha, and then later on had another meeting and just have been full steam ahead from that point on. Wellbeing Chicago was born because as Lori was really thinking about what space she wanted to occupy in this building, it was really like, oh, I think that sounds like the wellness center we talked about years ago. So Jabori and I got together and kind of created this business plan and gave it to Lori. Like, I think this is what you want. Lori gave it back and was like, I think this is what you guys should do. And so then there was Wellbeing Chicago. I really only came into this project to be helpful. And now I am owning a second business.
Are you from Evanston, Tiffany?
I am, born and raised.
Where'd you go to school?
Lincolnwood, Haven, and ETHS.
Nice.
Yeah.
So
I just want to add on to Tiffany had to say, the thing that was most remarkable to me, and it's not remarkable anymore, but it was like these women commitment to their community, commitment to bringing others. It's unusual. I live in communities too, and it seems like everybody's in it for themselves most of the time. And so just that in and of itself was really special and has really helped this become a yes and yes, my business and the community. And so it really feels truly like a home. It's going to be a home for many people.
Are you from Evanston, Lori?
I'm not. I live in the northern suburb. I live in Glencoe, a few suburbs north.
Got it. Jackie, what say you?
So, yeah, Tasha came to me with the idea of the Laundry Cafe. So I still live here. Now, Tasha moved up north to Zion. I live in the Fifth Ward. So when she came to me about that particular idea, we were thinking Fifth Ward. In particular, we was thinking Ramey's. You know, we could have it right here. I live like literally across the street. And she's like, you know, what do you think? Up the street in your neighborhood having something like this. And I was like, yeah, no, that sounds great. We don't have a place like that really anywhere in Evanston, but how nice would it be to have it in the Fifth Ward where we can come and do laundry and have a cup of coffee and read the paper or whatever. So with that idea initially, and Tiffany was there for that as well, I was all in. Right. We grew up on Florence together. So we have been throwing some other ideas, collaborations that we could do together post-retirement with the police departments, maybe buying some properties. And we just wanted to do something together and something in Evanston. But that was it. And we were rolling with it. But then we hit those roadblocks. And then Ramey's, you know, they were vacant for a while, but then they got snatched up. And as you know, in Evanston with real estate, it was tough. We couldn't find anything else in the Fifth Ward, but then we found a building right down the street from where we lived on Florence on Church. I think it's 1611 Church. So it's like right at Church in Florence. So we had our eye on that building, huge building, nice building, way too big for the Laundry Cafe. But now we're like brainstorming, what else could we have in this building? Like, could we buy the building and then rent to others? And that's how we would support them. We're just thinking out loud. And there was no way that we could, I mean, we couldn't get a $250,000 loan for equipment. So thinking about that building was impossible, but it was a thought. It was something we were tossing around. We even went and looked at the building knowing that like there was no way we was going to come up with this money. So we go look at the building and we like, yeah, this is great. Fast forward that day that she meets Lori, she calls me. I happen to be off and our schedules are crazy. So we are hardly ever in the same place at the same time. And she's like, these women are going to meet us at that building and we're going to look at the building. So again, that day I meet them at the building. Lori and Julie look at the building. They like the building. And this is before we really started any ideas. We just the building and we're vibing. First time meeting one another, talking. And we clicked and it was like, okay, we want to do something. We'd like to do it in this building and let's start meeting and talking. And so we did from that day on. I want to say at first it might've been every week and then every other week, just throwing out, what can we put in this building? Surrounded by health and wellness.
You talk about impossible. And yet here we are.
Yep.
And this, to me, when I listen to you all speak, I think about every child, every girl, every, not just girls, but boys, because we inspire boys and men too, that there are possibilities mm-hmm. to do things. And we can dream too. And those dreams can turn into a reality. And you spent a lot of time working and you had a certain amount of luck, because I always say you can work real hard. You can be the best at it. But if you don't have a little luck in there, a little blessing in there, you know, sometimes that doesn't happen. But the no might have been the best no you got from Chase, right? Because that was looking at something that was going to take you to this one space. And now you're in this space that's just growing. So
still got to address Chase.
You know, let me dig in a little bit, if I could. This organic conversation that happens, this organic meeting that happens, unplanned, but you end up making a connection, right? At Evanston Rules, we talk about equity, we talk about access, we talk about diversity, we talk about racism, right? We also talk about accomplices, right? Not allies, right? So why does a white woman living in Glencoe, and this is for you, Lori, why do you choose to be an accomplice? That person that said, I don't have a lot of Black friends, but you chose to do something that was morally and ethically right. And your answer is for the so-called liberal white folk in Evanston who listen to this podcast that talk about diversity, but don't do jack to make it happen. Why did you choose to help these sisters?
Well, I think I'm not crying being the dumb white lady that cries, but when you know your own suffering well, you feel others suffering.
Yes.
That's real. And the great thing about it is it's okay.
And so I think through, mental health with my son, through my own suffering, realized, and I have it real good. I grew up in a rural farm community. You know, we were simple people. You helped your neighbor, you participated in life. And then I live a very different life here. And I think just the gnawing, a real sense inside that it's not right. It's not okay that it's all for me and my little small world, that my kids matter. And that's all I'm going to care about. It just was not something inside of me that felt okay. And then it felt equally scary to step out and think at a time when it's very heightened that I was going to do something, that I could even do something, that I know how to do anything like this. I've never done this. I'm like, was a stay-at-home mom. But I started working in Evanston with meditation and mindfulness and really started to embed a little bit and know the community. And I thought, well, shit, this stuff is amazing. Everyone should have these kinds of tools. Everyone, every kid. And so that's kind of how I came to Evanston. My husband has a business there. And yeah, it was just, it's a calling. It's that this is required of you, sweetheart. And I mean, this has been the greatest gift for me. It's like my whole life's opened up. My life's better when others' lives are better. And it's hard to step out because I still have my cushy life. You know, I often say we shit in one place and then we say, oh, but I got to go do some philanthropy over here. And to me, you know, the systems, when I saw the work of like, okay, like you just said with the bank, how do we work with that? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, this is magic and this is beautiful and this is going to flourish and it's going to be a beacon. But it's like somebody else is still going to show up at Chase. And so I think this is an opportunity to look at those structures too. We need to be able to talk to each other. We need to be able to figure this out together. So I want to be a participant in that, in understanding the systems. I'm part of that and I see that. And how can I help there?
Right. And the thing is, seeing that and being part of the system, but having the wherewithal to just do the right thing. Right.
And well, and for me, it's been one step. Can I take one step in that direction? And before you know it,
you're running.
You're all in.
You're there. And yeah. You're like, oh, okay, I think I can do this. But it's the fear, this that paralysis of don't go and I don't know and whatever it is that keeps one stuck and it's not my concern and I'll do some philanthropy over here and that'll whatever. It's like, no, no, no. You know, like each one of us. And that's what I love about this building. And these women, we're all each one individually accountable for themselves and their stuff. And then how do we take that and participate in our communities?
So for Tiffany, Tasha, or Jackie, we grew up in Evanston. We are told it's diverse. We're told that we all have the same opportunities. But we really don't. We've all grown up knowing people who have more opportunities. And yet, I also believe that we find the people we're meant to find. Do you feel that you've experienced in Evanston that diversity, that equity
that Evanston talks about?
I would say yes and no. And the reason I say that is because I definitely feel like I benefited from the Evanston school system when I was in school. That is the most diverse space in Evanston, in my opinion. Not so much my elementary school, but by the time we got to high school, it was super diverse. And you saw people of different ethnicities, different religions, different abilities. And there was a lot of opportunity there. And it helped us learn how to navigate and interact with anyone, anywhere. When you got out of school and you went home, especially for me living in the Fifth Ward at a time when it really was predominantly Black, I would always wonder, like, and now I live in the First Ward, which is predominantly White. And so the experiences I had then are pretty much similar to what I have now, as far as the segregation component of it. I have been in this building. I am on the board of my condo, and I still have new people who come into this building and look at me like, what are you doing here? And so then they come to a board meeting and they see me on the board of the association. And so I think that's the trick about Evanston. And it can be surprising to people because they'll see the pictures of the school and the kids all together and they think that's how the town works, and it isn't. And so I think that in the school, there's opportunity for that equity and all that good stuff. But in practice, beyond that, it's definitely lacking.
I think Evanston does a good job on forcing Black folk to learn a double consciousness.
Yes. Absolutely.
How we get along in North Evanston, how we get along in the Fifth Ward,
yep.
How we can move so fluently in and out of those worlds, right?
Yeah, we're the kings and queens of code switching.
Right, and the unfortunate piece about our Black experience in Evanston, learning that double consciousness, learning how to code switch, is that our white counterparts never have to do that.
Yep.
Right? Because the access and opportunity is always there.
Yep.
What say you, Jackie?
I say that I am better off with being a kid that grew up in Evanston. I think we sound and look better than what it really is. But even with that said, the experiences and the diversity we do have is such a blessing and gives us an advantage because we are able to switch gears, speak in different languages, be in different circles. And personally, I mean, I've always been comfortable. I went to Dewey and then I went to St. Mary's and then I went to Haven starting in sixth grade and then ETHS. So I had a little bit of a mix in terms of the education, but it was always pretty diverse. And I didn't realize how diverse it was until I went to college. And I just went to Eastern Illinois in Charleston on a basketball scholarship. And I was in class with white girls who had never been in a class with a Black girl. I had a teammate from East St. Louis who had never been in a class with a white girl. Like, so I'm in class with people, I'm totally comfortable, but they're looking around like they're seeing ghosts. I've never experienced this. And I'm like, look, this is nothing. I've been in class with Black people, white people, whoever, you know, and it depended on your track, at least back then, it did depend, right? Because freshman year, I was in all honors classes. So I was always the only Black kid in the class. But if you were in track two, it would be a mix and you might have like one white kid in the class.
And that's where the problem is.
Yeah.
There's so many who don't get the opportunities or are told that they don't measure up in many ways. The idea that college is not just a reach, but it's almost an impossibility for some. And I think I was talking to someone, we were talking about Evanston Township High School being the most diverse space in terms of people all under the roof, but the experiences are still relatively segregated. The opportunities for classes for many weren't there like they were for you. And whether it's parental support or teacher support or systemic racism, that still exists here for far too many. Pasha, what about you?
I'm with Tiffany with the yes and the no. So I do think the diversity, of course, we've all experienced that. It has been beneficial to our lives. The equity part is a little off because, you know, we were young kids playing in big mansions and it was just like they already had. And I was always thinking, like, how do I get that? Like, you were born into this. I was not. And I don't come from Black folks who didn't do anything. Like, they were hardworking in their communities, had great jobs, but we still lived in modest homes. So I'm thinking, well, why do you have so many rooms? You know what I mean? Like, it, not that's a knock to them. It's just like, how did you already get here? So I had friends who would take me to like Vail, Colorado for the weekend, or I'm sorry, for like a week during Christmas break. And we're in the mountains and Vail is beautiful. And I see Wildcat jackets everywhere. I was like, I thought we were the only Wildcats. And they were like, oh no, they go to school with us. I'm like, oh, these are my classmates, but this is like their second home. This is where they live when they're not in Evanston. You know, I just go to grandma's house and we're just over there with the Encyclopedia Britannica's think we're doing it. Grandma has the encyclopedias. And it was just like, how do I work hard to get this? And in the end, you can still work hard and you still end up in the modest home. So it's weird. It's a weird dynamic of the haves and the have-nots, even though we've learned to mix our worlds and accept each other. And we love our friends dearly. We know that some of our friends will fight for us and we don't even have to be in the room. Like, we know they're legit relationships, but at the same time, the equity and opportunity have been totally different.
I think that end part right there is really the crux of the matter when it comes to equity. And Evanston, I feel like people here think, okay, today forward, if I give you an apple and you an apple, then that's equitable. And it's like, you got to close that gap. And we feel like Evanston in general is the we, because we can get along with each other on the surface and we seemingly have this good relationship and a town full of white people who say they want to do the right thing, that we're moving in the right direction. And it's like, there's no substance to the things that we're doing and there's no thought to closing that gap. And so with that in mind, you can never have equity.
Well, we've been moving forward for 60 years. When we started school, it was the second year after integration. And people will say, well, it's the same. And I'll say, well, no, 50 years later, it is not the same because every day that it's continued, it gets worse because our children see this, our children feel this. And you know what? It's not just Black folks who are suffering from it. White folks are suffering it too because they don't get the opportunities to really know what's going on.
The financial gap as it grows is an implosion waiting to happen. I mean, that's why we should care too. If for no other reason than the financial disparities are so vast. And it's not COVID, sustainable.
COVID has really brought that up. When kids couldn't go to school and kids needed help, when Horton came in and suggested that kids go back to school, that certain kids go back to school because they needed it more, there was a lot of pushback.
I submit in my limited experience that the problems that we're talking about now have always existed. And I think colonizers can only do what colonizers do, right? And if we look at Evanston, if we look at who suffered from integration, if we look at the two terms that are used all over America, gentrification and subsidized housing. When subsidized housing is communicated, we know exactly what that looks like. When gentrification is happening, we also understand what that looks like. And unfortunately, we all know the Fifth Ward is being gentrified, right? And I think it's marvelous that Foster School got approved and it's going to open. But the reality of that school being open, that in 5 years, by the time the ground is done and the building's complete, it's going to be a predominantly white community. So the wealth gap is huge, but let's just call it what it is. It's systematic. It's organized. And that's why it's so important that this group has gotten together to say, let's do something in our hometown. Let's do something in our community where folk can not only come and mingle, but from everything I talked about with you, Tasha, is I keep hearing this opportunity to keep some history intact. I mean, one of the things that your father always talks about is the history, right? What's going on, what has gone on, and how do we preserve that in a place like you guys are doing in Evanston, where you can tell the stories, but provide the support to everybody that looks like you and for those that may not look like you that are coming to the community. I think that's the beauty of this collaboration, right? Because Black folk have been complaining about what's going on in Evanston for the 60 years that I've lived here, and it still hadn't changed. So, I mean, this is just a golden and remarkable opportunity for Evanston to live the equity and diversity that it talks about and sell that story from the mountaintop.
And not just Evanston, because it can show all over the country, all over the world. This is a story that we've been waiting for. I mean, you all walked in as powerhouses. This didn't make you a powerhouse.
But that's the piece though, right?
That's the power. We're all powerhouses here, period.
Without question.
And that's a beautiful thing to stand there like that.
So tell me a little bit about, let's start with you, Tasha. What brought you here? You've had this career, this awesome career. You didn't even know that you wanted to do this. But why this? Why now?
In the beginning, it was just, we need to retire. We cannot, you know, we cannot carry these vests physically, figuratively anymore. Our backs hurt. My back is killing me. I'm arguing with my doctor right now to just let me go to the stretch lab. And that's become an issue. But I didn't know, but I know that I'm probably the one in the crew who holds on to the history of Evanston probably really deep, because my father preached it. My grandfather preached it. My great-grandfather preached it. You know, his Scottish mama who was here preached it. Like, it was just ingrained in us to be proud of where we're from. And what drives me nuts is that everyone tells this Evanston story, whether it's reparations or we're progressive in this way or that way. People are stealing our story, stealing our homes, stealing our culture, and saying, come here. You know, they sent out that little beam to the world, the most livable city in America, come here. And literally, we're being escorted out. Damn. So it's come here. But the people we're bragging about, they don't even live here. So I feel like this project has allowed us to grow, open doors we have never seen before for each other. I feel like Lori would always say, like with the first meeting, she's like, I just want to pay you for your time. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, you were just having a meeting. And I'm basically just talking about the Laundry Cafe, but it was like, your story is important. And then we had to explain to her, well, your story is important. So we have sat around for 2 years pushing each other to the brink to open doors for ourselves that other people said no to. And I just feel like we have to hold on to a piece of who we are and the story that they stole.
And the story that they stole. I'm going to say it again. And the story that they stole.
And that they continue to steal.
Yeah. You were mentioning the school. And I know that my parents... Well, my mom was born at 2040 Brown at the Black Hospital or the community hospital. And my father, who I guess had a few more strings as far as the family was concerned, and he was born at St. Francis Hospital when a time. And my parents aren't even 70. You know, they're not, and they weren't even allowed to be born in the hospital that I was born in. And I just watch it. And then I watch this school get voted on, which, yay, I'm happy for. But in the end, we spent 60 years fighting for a school we will not be able to attend. So my joy for it is a little, it's just, I mean, it's not really there, you know, and it's like, I feel like the Ox team, you know, we debate with each other, we support each other, we go through all the emotions, but I feel like our goal is to create a space for everyone. And the space was created by people who are from here, who look like us, and supported by great people like Lori and Julie and Jesse and so on.
Tiffany, tell us about what is the future of the Ox.
What does it look like 10 years from now?
It looks like the change that Evanston says it was about. So it is thriving. There will have been, I'm going to throw out 50 businesses that have been born there, and some have will still be there. Others will have expanded and franchised and moved on, but it will be that place that will still be Black led and the birthplace of many other Black owned businesses. And it will be the example for so many other projects like it in so many other cities. And I just want to just take 1 minute to highlight my partner, who is a Black man, because society has a love affair with Black women right now. And that's wonderful. But I think that it also, because that's safe. And so I want to make sure that the Ox is always supportive of not just Black businesses, not just Black women in business, but in Black men also, because they are truly forgotten about and marginalized more so than any other ones. So I want to make sure that the Ox is also a space where Black men feel that, one, they can come and use our services, but also they can build their businesses there also and see Black men like my partner as an example and as a light and as hope for them too.
Jacqueline, 10 years from now, what would the Ox look like?
It'll look like a place that is just a staple. Like, people won't even be thinking about the beginning. They'll just... it'll be a place of destination, right? Now people are like, well, man, where is it? You know, like, I can't imagine where it's at. And people know where it's at when they say the Ox, and people will go there intentionally for whatever services or just to hang out. And many businesses will start there. And the Laundry Cafe will still be there doing its thing. You know, my kid hopefully will be graduated from college and back there helping out. It's going to be that place, not only the Laundry Cafe, but every other business like Hecky was, where people are like, yeah, I got my first job there. That's where I started out. Whether it's a first job or an internship, we're connecting with the high school, with their vocational program. Like, it's going to be that spot where everyone is going to, but not just us. Right? Because we're creating it, we're behind it. And I think there's a little bit of apprehension with some white people because they're like, well, this is just for them. You know, we like the idea, but it sounds like a them thing. Well, it's not really. It's by us and it's for us, but it's for everyone. It's for the Evanston community.
To say it's for you, because there's still places in Evanston that's not for us.
True. Right?
And we, I think, as Black people need to be comfortable saying, you can come visit, but it's ours.
Right, right. And hopefully in 10 years, people will be comfortable with that. Right now, there's people who are very uncomfortable.
For many years, we've gone into so many spaces where people weren't making it for us. And we've supported those spaces. So it's okay for people to come and support our spaces. I think speaking to that, that it's not theirs, but it is for them too. You're coming into my house and I'm going to make you comfortable. We'll teach you things. We'll sell you things. But I think that you all, each one of you speaking up, I'm sorry that Jabori couldn't be here because that would have been awesome. But, you know, hearing all of your voices is really important, that you've stayed with these ideas, that you've made them into a reality. That is the history lesson that we've been looking for.
I'm gonna lean a little bit to the left or right, just for sake of this conversation. It's okay for Evanston Rules to say, as we said at the beginning of this story, we're trying to really focus on the Black perspective. And when I think about how long and how many times I've been made to feel uncomfortable or like I didn't belong because of the color of my skin, one of the things I heard Lori lean into is the ability to understand that perspective in order to change a mindset. So I want to go back to, the goal shouldn't be to make anybody feel uncomfortable, but Black people in America, in Evanston, do too good a job, I think, at going out of our way to make white folk feel comfortable. And it's okay that you don't, because I already know you're going to be welcoming. That's who you are. That's what I've heard in this conversation. But I also understand what Evanston historically does. So, Lori, how will you continue the conversation about your why for the next 10 years?
Well, slow and steady, stretching and stretching, and asking that of others. Because I get to be a little uncomfortable now. What don't I know? What will I say wrong? What should I be doing? Is this what? Do I belong? It's okay. And I think we need to ask that of ourselves, those of us that there's this philosophy that I like to think about is like, if there's a pool, I talked about suffering in the beginning of suffering, that we each have to pick up our share. That otherwise it's misplaced on others and we ask others to carry that. So I think about it in that way, like it's my responsibility to pick up my share of the joy, of the sorrow, of the ways that we can avoid all the things. So it's a stretch, and it's a stretch I want to continue to make. So I would ask my white people like to begin to think about the ways that we need to pick up our share and we need to step forward, and it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because, you know, this is still happening and you're in this. And when you have a voice, use your voice, and not only use your voice, but like take your steps forward. But it, again, with the system that we're a part of.
And I think that was going to be my question. How do you navigate it with your friends or the people you know who don't get it?
Well, I don't have that many friends left anymore. I'm starting to talk more because the first conversations is, this is not about Black people to me, this why I got involved here. Is that might sound ridiculous to say. It was about the right move in my vicinity. It's what can I do in what's right here in my backyard? How can I join here?
When you see wrongs being done, or when you hear people speaking in ways that takes you aback, what do you do?
Well, the best thing I know is take steps in the direction. If it's not necessarily around racial issues, but maybe it's around ways that we're any harm that we're doing, whether it's the planet harm or, you know, I mean, how to talk about the capitalist system.
You got to be willing to do.
You've got God behind you, whatever you want to call God. You've got the wind. When the heart's aligned with the integrity and the values, you're supported.
Like to say yes, but I think about the generations of people whose hearts were aligned and they never got the opportunities. And in part, that's with Evanston Rules. We've heard stories, we've had experiences, we've known people, we know people who had the right ideas, who had the thoughts, who got turned away from the banks, who never met you, right? Or people like you, people who lost everything and worked real hard. So my question for all of you would be, how can the community help? How can we help? What can be done to help with the aux? What does that look like?
We're about to go into another phase where we're trying to raise the money where the community buys back into it. So like, we're going to need people to work with us. Like, we've been brainstorming in ways that we can get that word out and how to educate the public on what it means to own a share of the aux. We need people like you guys to put that word out and to help brainstorm, because we're going to be in the churches. We're going to be at the community centers. We sat down and talked about talking to the fraternities and sororities and like get the community involved and educated on the OX and on the project, and then get them to buy in. You know, not everyone will be able to buy in, but we really want people who look like us to buy in and own a piece of the OX. And it's not just a financial thing, because the return is, I believe, like 5 or 6% maybe. But the return is so much more, because it's us. It's all about us, you know, a place for us. So having that pride and being able to say I own part of that, as many of us as possible. So then that's going to be huge. Just $2 million. And, you know, one of the fears with the council was that it really wasn't going to be owned by the community, that somehow Lori was going to benefit from it and she was going to still own it and or sell it, but sell it to white people. Well, we can't control who buys it, but we want people who look like us to buy it.
So, but what types of funding are you looking for? So you say $2 million, but what does that look like?
So that's the community equity part. So this whole project is about $7.5 million. But in the end, we do want the both of you to say, I own a piece of the OX. And that would look like $1,000. But just say I am someone of means and I have $10,000 that I can spare. But you know what? I am going to give it to 10 different people. You know, I'm not going to own it. I don't feel like dealing with it. I just want to give this to make sure that Black folks own a piece of this building. That is our priority, to make sure there's Black ownership. Because as Jackie said, the fear is, well, what if I'm a white male and I can give you $100,000 and it doesn't bother me at all? You know, we have put in place where you won't have more power than that $1,000 person. We will be making decisions together, but we are hoping that we push the message and push it like never before. So that's why we're trying to get all this public portion out of the way. And we thank the city of Evanston for the $1 million. And as you said, we could have been more, but in the end, we want everyone who walked away or had to walk away from Evanston to say, I still have a piece. And we go from there in building.
And I just want to say that this community equity piece in particular is bigger than Evanston. And this is where we can take our piece of history and expand it beyond this, our zip code. So for Black folks in North Chicago, Waukegan, Rogers Park, Harvey, West Loop, Austin, anywhere.
South Cali.
Right. To have an opportunity to buy into that equity piece, but not just that, to see that this is something that they can do in their city. And support looks like many things, right? This is a big project with a big ticket. So of course, financial support is important, but knowing our story is significant. So you can tell it accurately is helpful. Following us on our various platforms on social media so you can stay current on what we are doing. If you are someone who is like, hey, I have a small business, I've been running it out of my house, maybe it's time for a brick and mortar. Tenants, if you know of someone, we still are looking for and have space for a few more tenants. So those are the free things that can be done to help us out. Listen, I'm a person of faith, so prayers is supportive and helpful.
I think we've sometimes forgotten in these last couple of years what it's like to be near people and what that breeds and what that brings and how.
Well, I think that community that we, that is the part we haven't even talked about, but what is the sense of coming to a place and hanging out? And if you're struggling with something, your friend, you know, there's like this system, this built-in family structure, this a place to belong, a place to have a baby shower, a place to hold events. So beyond all the businesses, all of the community that's created.
And that's the part of the name also, the OX, you know, plugging in. Yeah, I mean, laundry in itself is a chore. And most of the time it's done by family. You know, if you're going to the laundromat, there's always mom, kids, dad. I've seen grandmothers coming to watch the kids while laundry's being made or done, I should say. So the name, the OX, is exactly why it's called that. The auxiliary cord is what Black folks use to plug in for that long ride cross country. Like if you didn't have the aux cord, there's no going anywhere. Like you got to stop the car. You got to go into Walgreens. You got to get an aux cord because that was important. That music, that beat, that connection. And that is why the name The Aux is what we chose to go with, because we have to get back to connection. I think we think the internet, we can see our friend in China and say hi. We're not really connected anymore. You know, those spaces like Family Focus or Foster or the Y for our elders, that was important. And we have to find a physical space to be together again and not the internet. That's not a physical space. That is like figment of our imagination, and we're trying to break that mold.
Keep on pushing. I want to thank everybody for joining us today and coming along on this journey, and that you'll follow along with us as we continue to air a new podcast. You can find us at evanstonrules.com. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and we look forward to hearing from you. Move up a little higher.